I thought I would introduce our Bible reading reader this morning, because many of you may not, you may have seen him over the last month or so. Jeshua, could you come forward? It's not Jeshua the high priest from Haggai, but his name is Jeshua, and I have had the joy of getting to know Jeshua a little bit, and he's from, where is it, Kansas? Missouri, Rolland, Missouri, and he's studying at the Anderson University. So he's the person who drives the furthest to get here every Sunday morning. But we really appreciate and get to know Jeshua. He's a good young man, and appreciate his desire to come all this way to help us as a church. And so I'm going to ask him this morning to read. Thank you.
The reading is Luke 6, 27 to 45. But I tell you who hear me, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If someone strikes you on the cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is it to you? Even sinners love those who love them. Even if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is it to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with measure you use, it will be measured to you. He also told them this parable. Can a blind man lead the blind man? Will they both not fall into a pit? A student... is not above his teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me take the speck in your eye, out of your eye," when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your eye, then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. The good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For out of the overflow of his heart, his mouth speaks.
Thank you, Jeshua. Well, following Jesus, how are we doing? I tell you, as we look at these different aspects of what it means to follow Jesus, it becomes very challenging for all of us, for me and for you, I'm sure. And today, I suppose, more than any, we'll be challenged, or we should be, by the words of Jesus and the example, of course, of Jesus in this regard. We are called to become Christians not just to be happy and content and have that beautiful relationship with the loving God. We're called to experience his love and then demonstrate or live that love out in our own lives. Many years ago, when our kids were very small, I was an evangelist. I used to travel away, sometimes 3 or 4, sometimes 5 or 6 weeks away, but not all that often I was away for that amount of time. But on one occasion, we had to go to a family camp. And as we went to that camp in Totara Springs in New Zealand, it was just prior to my leaving for about a month. And I was going to be away from Marg and away from the kids. And we booked ourselves into the camp and found that all the cabins had been filled, and all the they had motel units there. They'd all been filled, and we had to end up being separated as a family and go to the more of a group, a men's and women's, for the overflow, for those who couldn't get into units. And it was very disappointing. And then one of the guys, a couple that we know, good friends of ours, who we weren't really close to, but they were from our church, and they said, "Oh, that's no good. You're going away for such a long time. We've got the unit there, but we'll take your place and go and separate into the men's and the women's area, and you can have the unit that we had booked and paid for, extra for." And it's just one little story of many examples, I'm sure all of you and ourselves can tell, of love, of people regarding the other person as more important than themselves, of showing that kind of Christ-like, fatherly, God the Father, mercy, love, and grace to others. The whole purpose of the Bible is to make us more loving. To love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself, is the sum of all that God wants us to do. And God is love. I was thinking during the week of different religions and their expressions of what God is like, and there is nothing to compare with the amazing love of God. So when his Son became one of us, when God the Son took on human form and lived among us, you would expect, of course, that he would love, that he would show compassion, that he would be the full expression, as he was, of his Father's love. And then in verse 40, we had read to us from this passage, "The student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher." And Jesus, in the middle of talking about love, loving your neighbor, loving your enemies, says, "You've got to be like me." And of course, at that point, when he said that, they realized that he had spoken fairly stern words to the, quote, enemies, those who were opposed to him. But he spoke the truth to them. But then they weren't to know that not long after that, they would be watching as the enemies took Jesus and nailed him to the cross, and Jesus would say to them, "Father, forgive them." We are called to follow Jesus in this area of love. So we're to love as Jesus loved. And so I've got 2 points this morning. The first one is, who are we to love as Jesus loved? Everybody? Well, the Bible teaches we're to love our neighbor. And when this came up in Luke's Gospel a little later in chapter 10, you'll read the story where an expert in the law came up to Jesus trying to trick him and said, "What shall we do to inherit eternal life?" And he said, "You know what the law is? What does it say? What is it?" And this person replied, "Well, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus said, "Go and do it." And this man said, trying to trick Jesus, "Who's my neighbor?" Now, the import of that is not easily discerned, but what the story was, that Pharisees and the teachers of these experts in the law had changed things a bit. And they took from Leviticus 19 verse 18 where it says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. The one of your people and loving your neighbor, they put together and said, therefore, it's only God's people and those who are accepted into the community of God's people who we're to love as ourselves. But the enemies, you can hate your enemy. In fact, that's what they said. They said, you love your neighbor, but you hate your enemies. And Jesus quoted that back in Matthew's gospel, where the same passage is written down there. And where Jesus said then, he said, you've heard that they say, you shall love your neighbor but hate your enemy, but I say unto you, love your enemies. And that was their mindset. Yes, you can love those who are part of the community of God's people, but your enemies out there, you hate them. And Jesus said, no, you're to love your enemies. And then the man said, well, who is my neighbor? And Jesus then told the story that we all know of the Good Samaritan, of the man who was a twit walking down that very dangerous road. It was well known, it was notorious for robbers, and people went in groups, and he walked by himself. Mind you, the priest and the Levite did too, but they probably wouldn't be robbed, but they didn't probably have much money. But anyway, the Good Samaritan, however, came along after the priest and the Levite walked the other side and had nothing to do, probably because of worried that they might make themselves unclean if the man was dead, he looked dead, or maybe safety first or whatever reason, it doesn't say. But then the Samaritan, the man who the Jews hated, the Samaritans, this Samaritan looked at his enemy on the ground, and he, with sacrifice of financially and time and energy, took that man and cared for him and paid for him to be cared for. He acted as one who loved his neighbor. And so Jesus said then, who is my neighbor? The one who showed mercy, the people had to reply. So who is my neighbor? The one in need. Anyone who's in need, to whom we are called to show mercy. Now the Quakers have got a long history of loving our neighbours as ourselves, of showing love in a world where there's often hatred and alienation of certain groups and peoples and so on. And we have a rich history of love. But I want to bring it down to today. That's our history. What about you and I today? Do you love your neighbour? Well, who is your neighbour? Well, maybe we're a little bit like the Pharisees. We are happy to love those within our group. But if they have a different political view, and that's pretty hot at the moment, do we love them? Do we love those who don't have the same sexuality, the same socioeconomic situation, the same ethnicity, or the same doctrinal stance? I'm appalled sometimes by theologians who speak so harshly against others who hold a different view in certain areas of theology. And Christians in this land and in Australia and in the Western world are very often are known to be people who don't treat other Christians very well if they don't hold the same views. Are people drawn to us because they see that despite our convictions on the truth, which we should have, and our convictions on morality, which we should have, and our even political views, despite whatever it might be, that we still love our neighbour as ourselves? It's a challenge. Because people will be drawn when they see love. Jesus said that. And that leads to my next point. We're not just to love our neighbors, we're to love who else? One another. And so Jesus in John 13 says, he washed the disciples' feet and said, "Do this. I'm doing this as an example for you to do it among yourselves." Then later in that chapter he said, "This is my commandment, that you love one another. And by this will all people know that you are my disciples." This is how people will identify you as a disciple of Jesus, that you love one another. And then in chapter 17, when he prayed, Jesus said these words, "I pray that they may be one, that the world may believe that the Father has sent me." In other words, not just will people know that you are my disciples, they will know that I am from God, that I'm the Son of God, because of the unity that you have among yourselves. And thirdly, who are we to love? We're to love our enemies. Well, who's my enemy? Religious leader that came up to Jesus in chapter 10 and said, "Who's my neighbor?" We could now echo that and say, "Well, who's my enemy?" Well, Jesus says, you look at the passage, we read on, and it says, "To those who hate you, do good to those who curse you, bless those who curse you, and those who mistreat you." These are the words Jesus uses. "Those who slap you on the cheek, turn the other." And if somebody takes your cloak, this is the kind of enemy Jesus is talking about. He's not talking about ISIS, although it includes ISIS. It includes the ones at the time of the early church who persecuted the church, and it includes the same today of those who would persecute the church. And by the way, the media doesn't say much about the huge number of Christians who have been targeted by ISIS. But our neighbour over the fence, who shovels stuff over the fence and who does things, who has a noisy parties or whatever it might be, we're to love our neighbour, but not just our physical neighbours. Neighbours are all those, not just neighbours, our enemies, those who we might think are ordinary people. They're not really bad enemies, like people who will take up arms against us or something, but we're talking about people who treat us badly, who malign us, who mistreat us, who insult us, who hurt us. When Jesus spoke about, and the New Testament talks about enemies, we find that it's not just people who shake their fist at God and say, "I hate you, God." It says we were God's enemies and were reconciled to him in Romans 5, talking about all people. It's just the very fact that we are living alienated from God, that we are called enemies of God. And in Colossians 1:21, "Once you were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior." And when Jesus responded to those who were his enemies, as I've already mentioned, he said, "Father, forgive them." But in 1 Peter chapter 2, we read, "To this you were called because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps." Follow Jesus in the way he responds to those who crucified him, who slapped him, who spat in his face. Follow in his steps. He committed no sin, and no deceit was found in his mouth. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. He left that with his Father. So who are we to love? We're to love our neighbour, love one another, and love our enemies. What about the next part? How are we to love? The very word love is positive. He's not saying here, hey, when your enemy does something to you, just be passive, you know, just bear it, you know. He's not saying don't retaliate. He's saying more than that. He said, love your enemies. Give. Do good to those who do evil to you. Pray for them. Bless them. It's positive. The golden rule, do to others. And in the context, do to those who are evil to you, who do bad things to you, who hurt you, who insult you. Do to others as you would have them do to you. You will be then children of the Most High. You will then reflect your Father's character. Because He is merciful. Even to those who are ungrateful and wicked, He shows mercy. I love it in the book of Acts, where you read that in, I think, somewhere about chapter 8, 9 or 10, you have that many of the Pharisees and the religious leaders of the day turned to faith in Jesus Christ. Those who had yelled out, crucify Him, away with Him, we will not have this man to reign over us. Those who spat in His face, those who crucified Him, were saved by God's grace and mercy. And so when Jesus prayed, Father, forgive them, He wasn't just saying words. He was asking His Father to forgive those who were killing Him. Oh, and we're called to follow His example. I love Alistair Begg and really value his ministry. And he says, to return evil for good is devilish. You do good and somebody does evil in return, hey, that's devilish. To return good for good is human. But to return good for evil is divine. I like that. The test of real love is that it is unselfish. Not focused on reward or driven by the knowledge that we will be paid back. And so Jesus says, if you love those who love you, what credit is it? He says it three times. What credit? What's the value? Even sinners, the worst people in the world, those who run cartels and murder people at a blink, because they will lend expecting return, and they'll do good to those who do good to them. They will, in that sense, love those who love them. I don't care. They're not idiots. They know what they know. You've got to do that, and that's them. But the average person, we all live this way. We you know, Marg and I and our neighbours have fun because we give them a couple of muffins or something and on a plate, and the plate comes back with something else on it, and so we've got to give them something else, and then they bring it back with something else, and. And so you give and it comes back and so on. But would we keep on giving if they not just returned an empty plate but just broke the plate and threw it away? I mean, this is what we're talking about. So he says, if you love those who just love you, who do things in return, hey, what's the value in that? But he says, love your enemies. Loving my enemies does not mean that we have to put them on our Christmas card list or make them our close friends. It doesn't mean that we excuse their actions. It means that we show mercy and forgiveness. So I've got five things here quickly. First of all, love is a choice. Real love. You see, there's a number of words used in the New Testament for love. In the Greek language, there are four. And one was storge, which is a natural affection. You know, close friends, they have that kind of a relationship. It's a friendship, affection, love. And then another word is filio, from which we get Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Well, that's love for family, brother, sister, parents. It's the warm affection of the heart. Then there's eros, from which we get erotic, which is passionate love. And in the Greek, and this fourth one is agape. And that's the one that's used here. Agape love was unique. It was different. It was hardly used in common parlance because it was so different. And what the meaning of the idea of agape is that it's a choice, that I will to love somebody. I may or may not feel that love. If you love your enemies with affection, you're weird. I mean, who would love your enemy with, I love that person. My heart just goes out in a feeling of love for that person who's just slapped me. That's not possible. But you are, if that person is hungry, you can feed them. And if they're being falsely accused about something else, you can stand up for them and do the right thing even though they've hurt you. So agape love is to desire only another's highest good and deliberately choose to be kind to that person. It's not based on their attractiveness or their merit or their value or their lovability. It's based on the fact that I am commanded to love them and I choose to do that. It's an act of the will. Someone has said, that was Alistair Begg, love is blind, we say. Well, agape love is not blind. You see exactly what that person is like, but you still love them. I like that. We cannot love our enemies with affection, but we can choose to seek their good, to help, to feed, to protect, or whatever they need. Secondly, it's a love that is practical. Jesus said, and when they do this, then pray for them, bless them, give to them. And if they ask you for your cloak, give them your jacket as well. Now, that might seem a bit weird. Like if a person comes to my place and breaks in and steals my laptop, I say, hang on a second, here's my iPad as well. It's not saying that. In fact, in Philippians chapter 1, it says that the prayer of the Apostle Paul for the Philippians and for us today is that your love may increase with all knowledge and discernment, with wisdom. And Jesus here isn't saying that you be a fool and just end up living as a pauper while all those evil people who've stolen stuff can go and live as kings. It's not saying that. In fact, Lenski says, love is to foster no crime in others or to expose our loved ones to disaster or death. Coupled with selfless love is the wisdom that applies love. In fact, you're doing that person a disservice if you help them in their crime and their life of crime. Where to love, however, in a practical way. Where to do things for people. Thirdly, where to love, it's a love that is gracious. It is one that does not judge. Do not judge or you will be judged. Now, no one likes to be judged. You don't like being put on the mat in a person's mind and checked over and condemned for anything. How would you want to be judged? I've recently had an appraisal in the church here where a group got together and appraised my work and my service for the Lord here. And it's a scary thing. People will be appraising you. You know, I wonder if they realize sometimes I'm late for work because of traffic. None of us like to be judged, but if we are judged, we would hope that they would be merciful. We would hope that they would take into account all the factors. that they wouldn't just make a summary judgment based on their feelings of what my motivation might have been or what my circumstances were. We would want them to be merciful in their evaluation of us, in their judgment. And that's what Jesus is saying. In fact, he's saying more than that. The reason for not judging is the plank. He says, remove the plank out of your eye when you see in another person's eye. I often wonder about that. How can you see in another person's eye a little speck when you've got a plank in your own? But it's a picture story. But Jesus is really saying, another person has got something small in their lives and you've got something huge, and yet you pick out and you judge that person for the small thing in their lives and you ignore the huge thing in your own life. And that's why he's talking about. He's not saying we're not to judge at all. In fact, he goes on to say, if you have a plank in your eye, remove it so you can remove the plank of the speck from your other person, from the other person's eye. So you have to make a judgment about that. So he's not saying don't judge. Somehow some Christians get the idea that we're not to make any judgment. We're not to, we just have to love people and accept their sinful lifestyle and accept their whatever. That's not what it's saying. In fact, the Bible makes it really clear. The whole New Testament is full of verses that show, for instance, we're to confront one another. It says that, confront one another. That means to point out something in another person's life. So it says in Galatians 6, if someone is caught in a sin, restore that person, but in a humble way. In 1 Corinthians 6, verse 2, it says you're going to judge the world. You can make judgments among yourselves. So it's not saying we're not to judge at all, but it's saying how we're to judge, where to remove the plank. We're not to do it hypocritically or harshly or selfishly. We're to help another person grow in their Christian life by pointing out something and encouraging them to face that. It doesn't mean setting aside God's laws or his standards of righteousness. It's not calling us to suspend our ability to make moral judgments and to discriminate between truth and error, right and wrong. It's not saying that we'd love people who break God's laws means to accept their sin or turn a blind eye to it. John Stott says, an individual who puts the worst construction on other people's motives and is ungenerous towards them when they make mistakes. That's what he's talking about here. We can't judge another person's motives. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 talks about that. Leave that to God. He's the only one who can do that. So that's the negative. But the positive is that our love is to be extravagant. We're to love in a gracious way by giving. And when we do, it will be given back to us in good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over. And it says, for the measure you use is the measure that you will receive. In other words, a person who receives in good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over, has done that to others. That's what it's saying there. We're to love extravagantly, we're to give. And the next one is to forgive. Whoa, now that's a big one. I've already mentioned Jesus on the cross saying, Father, forgive them. Martin Luther King Jr. in his 1963 book of sermons writes, forgiveness is the decisive factor in how much you can love your enemy. Let me repeat that. Forgiveness is the decisive factor in how much you can love your enemy. I'm sure there's no one in this room who hasn't or will not in some time be deeply hurt, injured by somebody's words, actions, or lack of action. When a deep injury is done to us, someone has written, we never recover until we forgive. After the shooting in the Emmanuel Church in Charleston just a year ago, relatives of the 9 victims offered forgiveness to the young man in his hate crime who had murdered their loved ones. Can anyone doubt that they were taking Jesus' words seriously? To love your enemy. What is forgiveness? If I forgive that person does that mean I have to be loving feeling towards them? No. You may or may not feel love. You may or may not be reconciled. It would hope that you would be reconciled, but sometimes it's not possible. But you can, and the whole idea of forgiveness is that you release them from the debt. You don't hold what they said or did against them anymore. You release it. And lastly, it's a love that is genuine. And Jesus spoke here about the tree producing different kinds of fruit. The tree that produces good fruit and the tree that produces bad fruit. And he's talking about the heart. That's what he says. He says, no good tree bears bad fruit. Nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. The good man brings the good things out that are stored up in his heart. You see, if we're going to love others, whether it be neighbor, one another, or our enemies, it's got to start in the heart. And that's why the command to love your neighbor as yourself is part of a bigger commandment to love God. When you love God with all your heart, you can love your neighbor as yourself, even if your neighbor is an enemy.